You're listening to the MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update Podcast.
So Wednesday's come around once again, and with that comes the feature that we've been having of late the last couple of Wednesdays, and we will continue to have as often as possible. That is our Warning Wednesday feature that we have with some industry collaborators, the likes of the FSCA, who joined me in today's segment to reflect on what's been happening in the market, what consumers need to be aware of, and how to better protect yourself as a consumer. I'm joined, as usual, by our resident consumer expert, or enforcement expert rather, the head of enforcement at the FSCA, Gerard van Dievendert, to take a look at the latest developments from the FSCA and things consumers need to be aware of. Good evening, Gerard. Always a pleasure speaking to you. This time around, we start off with a repeat offender. We start off with a warning for a company that was previously warned about by the FSCA, and it seems consumers may not have heeded the first warning, or the company may not have heeded the first warning and continued with operations, so you had to issue another warning.
Yes, thank you very much, Jimmy, and I certainly feel the same way. Always happy to speak to you, and as always, thank you for the opportunity to reach out to your listeners. It's so important that we get these messages out, and that is appreciated. Yes, unfortunately, with Trident Global, and there's a Mr. Richard Clark involved. I'm not even sure if that's a real name, but that's what the investigation is about. So just to put some perspective to this, this is an ongoing investigation. We haven't made findings yet. We've not reached the end of our investigation. We haven't imposed sanctions yet. So those things are yet to come after the investigated parties have had a proper opportunity to reply. We don't usually tell the public about our investigations unless it's completed. But we do have an exception, Jimmy, just to put the whole thing into context. If we commence an investigation and the FSCA is concerned about perhaps harm to the public or funds being at risk or the public being at risk, then we at least tell the public that there's an ongoing investigation. And this is exactly what we have done here. So this is an interesting case because it started as a result of us having received complaints, and the complaints basically relates to copy trading, which is certainly one of the focus areas of the FSCA. I'll talk a little bit more about copy trading. And the complaint was that I've lost all my money. And I'm sure, I know you know this already, and I'm sure some of your listeners will know this as well, but basically copy trading refers to this ability, possibility on trading platforms. It's often referred to as MAM accounts, where somebody can have a master account. So whatever instruction is entered onto the master account actually gets executed on the copy accounts or the slave accounts. So you don't have to trade, you just give them your money, and somebody else will make the decisions for you. You can, of course, see immediately what a dangerous exercise that is, because you immediately lose control of trading decisions. You have no idea what is the background of the person making that those decisions on your behalf. You don't know what his experience or skills or training or qualifications or anything. And that often leads to really poor outcomes. And of course, this happens on platforms. In other words, it's derivative instruments being traded. And you and I have spoken about this before. Derivative instruments, because of its very nature, is a high-risk investment. Allowing somebody else to make that investment for you or those decisions for you is a high-risk activity. And if the underlying is something like crypto, that is also a high-risk investment in itself. So this is a high-risk on a high-risk on top of a high-risk, and that's why it's so important that we get this message out. In the present case, I don't want to say too much about the case because it's ongoing, but public has been invited to join, and then they are encouraged to join the copy trading part of the whole operation. Very shortly, Jimmy, this is against the law. This is a criminal offense, actually, for more than one reason. So for you to conduct financial services business, you require a license, an FSP license, a financial services provider license. And for you to conduct copy trading, you need a very specific financial service provider license, and that's a discretionary license. That's the license that you will usually find with the big asset manager companies that make investments on behalf of the client, and they hold that decision. But they are, of course, backed by lots of research and by asset managers and portfolio managers in positions that have advanced skills and training and qualifications to make these decisions. So that's the type of person that gets this type of license. In our view, and we've been taken on reconsideration, and we have won the case. In our view, if you want to conduct copy trading for somebody, you need a discretionary phase license. Mm. It is as simple as that. If you are merely showing the trades to the copy traders and you saying this is what we're trading in, then you're giving financial advice. So doesn't matter which way you go. You need a license, and doing it without a license is a contravention.
Gerard, I want to clarify something here for the listeners that we are referring to very specific licensing over and above the licensing that already exists. We know we've got an ODP license for a market maker, and the brokers out there that act as market makers need to have an ODP license in place. We also then know that there's a Category 1 FSP license, which traditionally comes from the old FSB days that you were a part of, that was the original license that was in place when we didn't know how to better regulate the space. Let's be clear around the copy trading here, and then we'll move into the signal side of it, is that we're saying that on top of these two licenses, there is a Category 2 asset management license that is needed for copy trading services, and not just a Category 1 license from a broker's perspective, but also there's separate licensing from the signal the copy trader themselves. Is that correct?
Yes, Jimmy, thank you for clearing that up. You know, when you work with us every day, you kind of start assuming things off your head, and you're right, of course. I do come from the FSB days. I've been here so long, I'm getting an asset number like the other furniture. But so let me just give a bit of context to that as well. So if you just want to sell insurance, or you just want to do intermediary services, then you require an FSP license, as you refer to a Category 1. It's not such a difficult license to get, but we, of course, still look at your abilities, your financial soundness, your fit and proper, and so forth. If you want to actually provide discretionary services, in other words, make decisions on behalf of other people, that's a completely different story. We want those FSPs to have a higher level of ability, because it's an important decision to make investments, and you're dealing with public funds. So you're right, that is as you rightly mentioned, a Category 2 discretionary license. So that is what you require if you want to do copy trading, where transactions are executed in other people's accounts. If you are giving advice, that's a Category 1 advice license, and you need to have the specific skills and experience and training and qualifications with reference to the area that you're operating in. If you actually want to be the issuer of the contract for difference, or the derivative instrument, like for instance a CFD on crypto, a CFD on Forex pairs, if you want to be the issuer, then you need a product provider license, as opposed to a service provider license. So then you're not an intermediary anymore, then you're actually a product provider, and in a simple sense you can compare that with an insurance company providing the product, as opposed to the insurance broker being the intermediary. So that is where the ODP license comes in. And that is also a completely different and difficult license to obtain, because you have to show extensive risk management systems and deep pockets to be on the other side of a CFD, because if the market turns against you, you are left holding the candle, and you will have to then make good on all those open positions. So that is very important to understand that distinction. And we've taken action, imposed sanctions on a range of entities who conducted ODP business, in other words, issuing CFDs or derivative instruments while they only have an FSP license. Very important distinction you made there. Thank you very much.
And we've run through some of those companies, Gerard, in recent times over the last couple of weeks as well, highlighting the importance of that. Gerard, I want to quickly just clarify on the advisory license, the Category 1 advisory license. As a signal provider, someone who merely suggests a trade or says these are the trades that would one should take via a Telegram group or via whatever, is that considered advice by the FSCA? And does that then mean that the person providing the signals requires an advisory license themselves and not just the broker?
Absolutely, Jimmy, and thank you for that question. It's something that I've seen as a bit of a trend, and we are certainly looking at it very carefully. This whole idea of signals, I think there's, in some parts of the industry, there's a misconception that this has got nothing to do with the FSCA. But if you just think about it logically, the law says very clearly that if you give financial advice, and that's advice with reference to a financial product, if you do that, you need an advice license. So the first thing about that, that's a Cat 1, as you mentioned. The first thing about that is you must show that you are able to give other people advice about this financial product. And that's not because, you know, you've traded a bit for yourself or whatever the case may be. There's a very specific framework for licensing around this, of course. Now, if I give you advice on what insurance you should take out or where you should invest your funds, you need that license on advice. So if I'm going to send you signals, I'm really telling you in which direction to trade, or maybe which shares to purchase, or which derivatives to purchase, or whether to go long or short, or whatever the case may be. Those signals are nothing else but financial advice, and for that you do need a license. And we certainly looking at entities and individuals doing that, and it will lead to enforcement. There's a second leg to that, and look, maybe I should just say, Jimmy, that of course every case on its own merits. There might be a case out there where this does not qualify as advice, but I think what I'm really saying, and I'm sure you agree, is that it is a very dangerous activity to be involved in if you haven't properly cleared it in your head and with your advisors whether you require a license. But I would actually also like to add a second leg to this that's very important, and that will give some context. If you are the type of financial services provider that gives advice, there's another responsibility that kicks in, an important one, a very important one in our view. Mm. And that is the whole issue of suitability. And you have I talked spoken about it before. The whole issue of suitability. You are not going to advise a retired person to put his pension in a high-risk investment. You're certainly not going to do. And you are responsible for that. The advisor is responsible to make sure that the investment or the trade is suitable for the person. To be able to do that, you must go through some effort. And that means you have to sit down with your client and to evaluate his financial position. Now, if you're an old guy like me, you will take into account that I have a pension fund and, you know, maybe a few assets here and there, and then you will decide what is my risk appetite. And suitability of advice has several aspects, but by far the most important aspect of that suitability is, of course, risk match. In other words, is the risk that this investment or trade presents, does that match with the risk appetite of the individual? And once I had an expert testify for us, and he put it so well. And he was talking about a high-risk investment, and he said it is only suitable for a wealthy person with a range of investments, and this must only make up a small part of his portfolio. So that gives you an idea of how we should think about this. And that's why it's important that people that give financial advice must be regulated and must be licensed.
There you have it, folks, straight from the FSCA, their view on copy trading, their view on signal providers, and the relevant licensing that needs to be in place if you are executing or involved in any of these services. I think we'll leave it at that. Gerard, we'll pick it up on some of these other issues another time. That was Gerard van Deventer, who is the Divisional Head of Enforcement at the FSCA, joining me to provide us with more consumer awareness and important things that you need to be aware of.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update podcast, uploaded weekdays at 7 p.m. For more MoneyWeb podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.